I'm Lena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
You say that now. I'm sorry. I fell into season one. I'm so sorry.
Rude. We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. But we left some unfinished business in our previous episode.
Is this the corn dog?
Had one. It's fine. Whatever. It's no big deal.
We did it.
No, the unfinished business was we clearly, correctly determined Miguel Ortiz's favorite childhood film was Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
Yeah.
So it is time to decide what is the favorite childhood film of the rest of the Sequest crew.
Yes. We have to look up when everyone's, like, born.
I did.
Okay,
so,
good.
Captain Bridger was born in 1961.
Oh.
Therefore, he was around 9 in 1970.
Okay.
He was 6 in 1967. Like, this is the range of years in which I think people find their formative childhood movie.
Yeah. Black Hole? Oh, but he said he was 9. That would be a little late for him. That'd be a little late.
He could have found his formative childhood movie at age 18.
It's a little late. It's a little late. A little late.
I'm going to say the Planet of the Apes series.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think he was into the whole series growing up.
Yeah. But it's like space, and he doesn't like space.
He's
got feelings about space.
Yeah, maybe he was frustrated. I don't know.
What if it was the Million Dollar Duck?
What if he's the only person alive who loves the Million Dollar Duck?
I'm going to go with the Million Dollar Duck.
Sure.
This is a guilty pleasure.
Who's next?
Let's go in, like, order. So, Ford.
Ford. Okay. Ford was born in 1980, which, again, like, the 86 to 89 region for new releases, at least.
Okay.
However, I'm going to propose that Jonathan Ford was a TCM kid.
TCM kid.
He was a TCM kid. I think his favorite childhood movie was Bridge on the River Kwai.
You know? I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you said he was born when? Okay. What if he's a weird fucker that loves Return to Oz?
Oh.
It's like...
I love Return to Oz. We're
weird fuckers. But what if that's like his secret hidden thing is that he just loves Return to Oz? He's not going to tell people that's what his favorite
is. Like, he's afraid of the face-stealing scene, but he kept going back to it sort of thing. Yeah. I can see that. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, Lucas.
Lucas,
of course, born in the year 2002.
Okay.
Lucas Walenchek, younger than 9/11.
Jesus. Well, okay, so he was a very smart kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was thrown with the adults and stuff. So
Lucas's kid movies would have been like our high school and college movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm like.
Which is why I think his favorite movie is Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
Yes, right?
Yes. Yes.
With great power, Lucas. Come on.
But what movie would he have told the adults was his favorite?
Mm.
Like when he... Because remember, he's in like high school when he's like 10.
Right.
And shit. And like college. He's getting his college degree at 12.
Do you think he was trying to downplay how smart he is or trying to play up how smart he is? Are you thinking? Because the episode we're here to talk about today has an opinion on that.
So if he was around adults, he would be trying to play up how smart and mature
to fit
he is.
In with them. He wanted them to think he's a TCM kid.
Yes, and if he was kids, he was going to
Shrek,
downplay.
Shrek.
Yeah. Like, yeah, Shrek.
Love
like,
Shrek.
Spider-Man, you idiots. but if he's with adults, what was like, I don't know, an Oscar-winning film? And
Right. He was real into The Artist.
Yeah.
At least that's what he says.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Timothy O'Neill, born 1992. That means he was 8 years old during Hollywood's greatest year for young boys, 1999.
I always pictured Tim as having, like, this being fluent in several languages as a child.
Oh, okay.
And then expanding on it as he got older, right?
Okay.
So, like, what... we need a foreign film.
You need a foreign... I was going to say that's the tiebreaker because I'm torn between The Matrix and Lord of the Rings. Did Tim learn Elvish?
Yes, he did! Oh my god, yes!
He was a Tolkien kid.
He was a Tolkien kid.
To learn the languages.
And he's such a little nerd that he was definitely like running around speaking Elvish.
He knows
to kids
his Tengwar.
On the playgrounds, and they're like, what are you saying?
He knows Sindarin, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
He doesn't need the subtitles during the Arwen scenes. He knows that.
He's like, I know what that's. Actually, their grammar's off.
Brody's 1 year younger, born 1993.
Fast and Furious.
Yes, yes, yes! I wrote mine down in advance. It is right there.
Love it. Love it.
All right, Antonio Piccolini.
When was...
he was born in 1998.
Okay. Man.
Which means he is 4 years older than Lucas.
Okay, he's a classic man.
He is.
Three ninjas.
A classic, truly.
It's a classic to him.
I was going to say, perhaps just to make you happy, but he's the exact age when Meet the Robinsons came out.
Oh, I love Meet the Robinsons. It's so fucking good.
The Piccolos are a big kooky family.
Yeah.
Very fast-paced. Go, go, go.
They definitely like adopt members and the people from
Absolutely.
That just become family
Absolutely.
Members. Yeah.
You think Cousin Angie's actually like another grandkid of his grandparents? Come on, it's the Piccolos.
Well, and that was when he was going through his phase of wondering if he was actually related to these people. too. So it spoke to him on a level. It's both. He likes both.
All right, Dr. Smith. Dr. Smith,
Jesus fucking Christ.
Fictionally born in the year 1987.
Escape to Witch Mountain.
Escape to Witch Mountain. Okay, yeah. All right.
Or from, or whichever one was around at that
right.
time.
That generation's Witch Mountain movie.
Yeah,
okay.
Or she watched all of them.
You think she was a Disney Channel
she
in the
was,
house kid?
Yeah, and like the late night, you know, they're showing
okay.
the old ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me hit you with this one. Similar track as far as, you know, same studio, live action film, Homeward Bound.
You know, yeah, because she's like, I can hear animals too. This is completely normal. I mean, it's kind of why I was going with the Witch Mountain thing is because the kids are fucking weird. And but yeah.
Lonnie Henderson, her page on the Sequest Wiki doesn't have a fictional date of birth.
I'd put her around,
so I went for how old was the actor at the time, do some math. So
she's younger than, like, I'd say she's around Piccolo's age.
We're saying around 97. Yeah, which puts her 1 year off of Piccolo.
Yeah, like maybe another year older than him or something.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which means those 6 to 9 years we're talking about, 03 to 06.
Mean Girls. Mean Girls came out.
I think Mean Girls.
Mean Girls might be
and
a little.
And even so, it can be a favorite teen movie. We don't have to
going
strap
on 30.
Ourselves down.
She was a very.
That's a good one for her. I like 13 going on.
Yeah.
Walk me through your process, because you're more familiar with that movie than I am, but I feel like it's right.
13 going on 30?
Yes.
Well, because it's earlier than Mean Girls, and it's geared towards, like, I mean, it's one that you can watch at many ages, but she would be watching it when she's, like, the age, you know, 12 kind of thing. And, like, she's like, yes, I want to be like that, and...
I was thinking Anastasia.
It's a classic for her.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the like, you know, relatable goofy girl is actually elegant and no one sees it.
Could also go Swan, like, Princess.
Yes.
Real one that gets forgotten.
Thumbelina.
I love Thumbelina. I also love Swan Princess. I love all of those.
All right, let's rewind. Let's rewind.
Okay.
Dr. Westphalen.
Oh, she's a classic.
Born in 79, so we're talking like mid-80s.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay.
Splash?
Splash!
Where did Splash come out? When would be appropriate?
I think Splash was early 90s, so that would have been like a teen movie for her. I think she did love Splash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1984.
84, okay. Perfect. I'm 10 years off on Splash. Perfect. Actually, I was going to say either like The Great Muppet Caper or something not for children at all. Like she was a weird child who loved The Name of the Rose or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she would love Barbarians. We're all barbarians. Why am I playing?
The Lion in Winter.
The Lion in Winter. Yes. She loves The Lion in Winter. Yes. She loves Katharine Hepburn.
Yes.
She would pretend to be Katharine Hepburn and shout, "We're all barbarians!" Like, yes. Absolutely. Oh. I'm so mad at myself for not remembering the name.
Were almost in that.
I know.
It was a scheduling
thing. It's one of my favorite things ever, but my brain's tired.
Okay. Katie Hitchcock.
Oh.
Born 1990 flat.
She is someone who means business.
Okay.
She wants something educational.
Okay.
She was a nature documentary
Nature docs. Oh, nature that's interesting. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Bill Nye as well.
I did not, and maybe I can blame the show for this a little bit, but I did not have such a strong handle on who she was as a child. So my ideas all went to she grew up as a romantic and a dreamer, but then that all got channeled into careerism.
No. Absolutely no.
No, no. No. So I was trying
to organized her socks.
She's not four. But
she's almost forked.
But so I was going between like Titanic, Spice World,
Girl Power,
or Ever After.
She would have loved Ever
Intelligent
After.
Intelligent Girl Power.
Ever After.
Yeah.
She would have been down. Yes, Ever After. Or getting a little early for her, Romeo plus Juliet.
Sure.
It's
educational. It's Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she was just over there like, yeah.
Okay, and the ex-Mr. Hitchcock, Ben Krieg.
Oh my god.
1 year apart, 1 year older, born 1989. Therefore, we're looking 95 to 98 for those prime childhood obsession movie years.
Sandlot.
Okay. This is one where I will only accept one answer, and it's the Star Wars Special Editions VHS box.
Also that.
1000%.
Yeah. That works. Power Rangers as well.
He was definitely a Power Rangers kid. He was a Power Rangers kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Crocker.
Crocker.
Born 1963.
Okay. What is a movie with a sea shanty? He loves bedknobs and broomsticks.
That's right around that time. Yeah.
He loved it.
I was thinking maybe he was real into watching TV reruns of, like, 50s westerns.
Also that.
Or the
Pete's Dragon.
The U.S. dubs of Godzilla movies from the 60s and 70s.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All of these are accurate.
So if you want to start, like, a Sequest film festival, I think...
Hey!
Very few of these are feature dolphins. I think maybe zero of them.
Maybe.
Throw in like Free Willy 2, just for good measure.
Someone needs to be a Free Willy kid. I need someone to be a Free Willy kid.
I mean, Krieg, Hitchcock, even Lucas, it lines up.
Yeah, someone needs to be a Free Willy kid, though. It needs to happen.
Anyhow, today we are talking about the 13th episode of the second season of Sequest DSV and Everything Nice. This is written by Lawrence Herzog, who previously wrote Playtime and By Any Other Name, and directed by Bert Brinkerhoff, who directed By Any Other Name. The Carnivorous Plants That Roar Like Dinosaurs team is reunited.
Roy!
And this one begins... with the nightlife of New Cape Quest.
Yes, they got a monorail. That's how you know it's Florida.
I mean, we see the monorail in the establishing shot whenever they're docked, but now they're like walking around beneath it.
And they're like, this is a cool ass place. It's also like grimy and filled with excitement and sin.
Yeah, like that juggling busker next to the unicycle.
Yes, but they're trying to make it all like dingy and the neon and like it's so edgy. And I was like, you have people like juggling and selling ice cream. And also you have like an announcement happening that's like, if you see something, say something.
Basically.
Crime is bad for everyone.
And so this crew is the Paella Boys plus the Bridge Buddies.
Yes.
So that's Piccolo and Lucas and Dagwood and O'Neill and Ortiz.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Tony. Tony's got the place. He's got the next location they're heading to.
Because he's got coupons.
He's got a coupon tree like me.
Hi, Nora. We got coupons.
So he's got these coupons for this place. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is going to go. And they're like, are we going to get kicked out of this place like the last five places? He's like, no, this is going to be great. We're going to go to this place. It's going to be awesome. Come on. We're going to have a blast. Let's go. And they walk up to it. And the place is called...
There is a moment in here where they where Ortiz and O'Neill make like fish faces and gill gestures at each other behind Piccolo's back to make fun of him.
Yeah.
It's great.
Except they also like state it out loud, so it's not really like behind his back. But they walk up to the place and it is called Virtual Dreams.
Virtual Dreams. And it is this back alley place with a neon sign and nothing else in the waiting room.
Just a lot of like tinsel streamers.
Yeah. And a receptionist at the cash register. Your like off-white plastic ka-ching rollout cash register.
Yeah. And she's like, it's gonna be 40 a piece. And he's like, no, I got coupons. And she's like, still 100 for all of you.
This episode is really invested in the wittiness and like fast short exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's just a bit of half jokes, but you do enough of them, it adds up to a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. O'Neill thought it was going to be free. He thought the coupon was that good.
You got to read the coupon, man.
It's going to be at least buy one, get one free. But like pushing it past that, boy, that's a little intense there.
Mm-hmm.
So they all show out their money.
Tony is covering Dagwood because, you know, he didn't bring any money, I guess.
Or, you know, he didn't bring enough.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know they were going to go like six places.
That's true.
Boys all go through like one of those...
A turnstile. Dagwood has to go sideways because he's so big.
He got a big butt. And Lucas, however, he lingers because he notices what the pretty girl is reading.
His daydream is a girl with a textbook.
Yeah. And so he's like, oh, you understand, you know, Mannheim. And she's like, do I look like I don't? It's like, that's not what I meant. Like,
in fact, Mannheim is rather elementary. It's this other guy who's impenetrable, but once you get through his thick prose, you find out that he's just an instrumentalist and easily disproven. And like, this is their conversation. This is how smart people talk.
Well, it's getting Lucas hot and bothered.
Yeah, it is.
He is smitten.
In my experience, smart people just talk about, just try to one-up each other with the grossest way to make a joke about balls. Those are the smart people, actually.
Yeah. And so, you know, he tries to get her name, and she's like, no, you have 30 minutes. Go, like, watch your virtual dream.
Yeah. So... The thing that this is, the service provided at this location with a very convenient half-off coupon available. Yes.
Which, that with a name like that, could be many things.
It looks rather illicit, right?
Yes.
But it's instead like your basic sort of... like
it puts your dreams in TV.
Yeah, it's related to like Neuromancer SimStim or something, right? You put electrodes on your brain and you experience your daydream. But because this is television, they show that by showing that. They're instead watching videos of their daydreams.
Yes.
And so we get to see the inner lives of our cast.
So first up, we got Tony Piccolo, who is seeing himself in a heavy metal hairband.
Yeah, you know that time in 2020 when hair metal came back in a big way? Sequest predicted that, definitely. Yeah.
And what I do love in these daydreams is that they are not alone. There are other cast members in it. So as the camera pans, there's like Dagwood holding up like applause signs.
Yes. You know how a band's really rocking and you don't know to applause or not?
Yeah.
So it helps that there's a roadie there with a sign that tells you now you applaud.
And Tony's loving it. He's just sitting there, mouth open, like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah?
Then we go to Ortiz.
And Ortiz, of course, is, like, sees himself as romantic, right? A dashing hero. Not of the James Bond persuasion, like we might have imagined.
No, the Confederate fucking army.
Yes! He's got a whole, like, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn daydream. And he's in the gray.
What the fuck?
Why is Ortiz a Confederate?
Why?
Also,
guess what? They don't like you.
Does everyone have a thing for Henderson? Because that is the fine Southern belle he is wooing, Lonnie Henderson.
Well, his options were her or Wendy. I think he made the better choice.
It could have been the receptionist out front. It could have been anybody.
And he's just doing this like weird, like smolder look at his TV of like, ah, yes, yeah, I'm so handsome.
That's how it would go down. That's the way it would be.
Yes, I would definitely be a racist.
I think we know what side of the Cuban Revolution the Ortizes were on.
Miguel.
I think he might be Florida Cuban and not Cuba Cuban, no matter what he says. I think.
So, Tim.
Yeah.
Oh, our buddy Tim O'Neill.
I think this show hates Timothy O'Neill. Like, this season in particular, so many things just make him awful.
And so, his is on the Sequest, and he comes flying in.
There's an alarm blaring. Everyone at battle stations, we're calling for the captain, and who should appear?
With girls with, like, very showing cleavage in their uniforms.
It's Captain O'Neill with his Douglas MacArthur scarf and glasses and hat.
Yes.
And he has bridge babes breasting boobily beside.
And so then he orders, like, Ensign Bridger, who is the biggest nerd. I think this is Roy Scheider's best performance ever. Honestly, this, like, 5 seconds.
I don't know. I think this sucks.
I mean, the whole thing sucks, but he went so hard.
He went,
like stereotype awful nerd. And
a really out-of-date stereotype, even for 1995. This is how people played nerds when Roy Scheider was growing up.
Yes.
This is the nerd from Greece, is what he's doing. Yeah.
But why I think it's amazing is because all this shit about Roy Scheider is he could have just gone there and been like, okay, I'm doing it. But he went so hard!
He did.
So hard! For a 5 second bit.
He's like giving himself a funny nasal voice. He's curling his lip to give himself buck teeth. He's constantly shoving up his glasses as he like hunt and pecks at the keypad. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's the worst stereotype. It's awful. But so hard. And then we go to Dagwood, whose daydream is just Darwin complimenting him.
Yeah, just having a nice chat with Darwin. He's like, I like you. And Darwin's like, yeah, I like you too, bud.
You're my good friend. You're very nice, Dagwood.
Dagwood, you can do this at home. You do this every day at home.
Darwin's a little too sassy. He'll only compliment him once. And then he's like, where's the fish?
Where's the fish? I think maybe we're supposed to take that Dagwood is such a pure soul that the thing he would want to experience is a thing he always experiences, hanging out with his friend Darwin.
Yes.
It's cute. It's sweet.
So then we pan to the room that Lucas is supposed to be in, and he is not there.
Bum, bum, bum. Where is he, though? Where Lucas?
He went home with the girl.
And if it weren't for the way the previous four, like, inserts were filmed, you would think this is his daydream. He's inside the screen. His daydream is to go home with his girl immediately. No, he just did. He just did.
He just actually did. He was like, no, I don't want to go watch a 30-minute daydream. Like, I guess, like, let's go back to your place, even though you're technically working, and my buddies will lock up. It's fine.
This isn't suspicious at all.
They're really nice.
They're very responsible men.
They'll make sure the door's locked behind
them.
They're
all in the Navy, very well behaved.
And so they've gone back to her place to have some coffee, and she, of course, is like, make yourself comfortable, I'm gonna go change. And so he starts looking around.
And finds her daddy.
Yes, he finds this picture, and he's like, why do you have a picture of this very famous doctor guy, Dr. Kirby? And she's like, because it's my dad. What?
And now we finally get a name. This is Sandra Kirby. She's played by Leslie Bega, who went on to play Tony Soprano's girlfriend in the latter seasons of The Sopranos, until her character gets set on fire in a kitchen accident. That's how she leaves the show.
I basically will never say anything bad about Jonathan Brandis.
Sure.
But for some reason in this episode, there are times that he doesn't say her name the same way.
Well, they just met.
Sometimes, it's as it goes on. There's not an excuse. Later, like, so her name is Sandra.
Yes.
Sometimes he says Sandra.
Yes.
Drives me crazy. Drives me crazy.
Anyhow, Leslie Bega would have been familiar to viewers at the time of broadcast for her lead role in the first three seasons of Head of the Class, a high school set sitcom for ABC.
So, they have their coffee.
You know what that means.
And caffeine really late at night.
Never mind. GTA 3 players, they know what's up.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what it's referencing in that, but okay. So, Lucas is just still so caught up on who her father is, because her father is, like, one of the highest ranking science officers in the UEO.
Yeah.
He's famous. He's amazing. And she's like, I thought you came here to, like, date me.
Well, yeah, but...
But your dad! Can I meet him?
What is Dr. Kirby's field or specialty?
I don't remember.
No one knows. They don't say. It's sort of a Westphalen situation where, in theory, he has one.
In the future past, you don't have a specialty. You just do science. You're just a scientist.
You just do science.
Or a doctor of all things. And that's it.
I mean, at a certain point, your job is just administration. He doesn't have time to publish anything anymore.
True. They gotta have their little chat about how, like, I've never met a girl like you who's smart and reads books that I do. And I'm like, yes, you have!
She even wears the same glasses as Red Menace.
You smooched her a lot.
A lot.
And they carry on this conversation about
how,
like...
You almost touched her nether regions.
No one understands. Like, I had to hide how smart I was. Other kids didn't get it. I've never met anyone like me. And I'm like, you were at a whole colony of people like you.
It was important. I love the bit where she's like, do you think I meet a lot of guys who know who Mannheim is? Like, the steamroller guy? I know who he is every Christmas.
Yeah.
But yeah, they start to bond over pretending to not read academic work.
Yes.
While, again, back in Hacker Camp, they all bonded over, you know, pride over that sort of thing together.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a different
thing. And
take.
The pizza. They also bonded over the pizza. Don't eat the sushi.
Don't eat
it's
the
important.
Sushi. It's frozen. It's kind of gross. You know, Lucas has just fallen so fucking hard.
Immediately.
immediately. Of course, they have one of those like cheesy lines of like, oh, I didn't want you to think I'm hitting on you or anything. You aren't? I was hoping you would.
Oh. Oh. You're oh. already at her house.
I was like, yeah, you went home with her. You went home. Also, she has a really nice house for being like 19 or something. I don't know.
Well, her 7 roommates are out right now. They also worked the night shift and didn't blow up.
Yeah. But they have a smooch.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
smooch.
They do smooching mm-hmm. at each other.
Mm-hmm. I am also like, hey, Lucas, I don't know. Question a girl bringing you home immediately. She's going to take you to a public space yeah. to scope you out first and make sure you're not
yeah,
a creeper.
Yeah.
She's what? Not going to take you home.
If you're going to get coffee, it's not from her kitchen. It's from, like, the shop on the corner.
You're going to spend at least some time there first before she decides if you're going with her.
Hold up. I got to text an emergency, like, code word to my friends.
Yes.
Just real quick.
It's okay. It's all good. Things are fine. I'm sharing my location. They don't reply to this text in 30 seconds. They're going to think I'm dead.
And the name of your commanding officer is... Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. The next morning...
Yes.
O'Neill's like, hey, Bridger, like, last time we saw Lucas was last night, and, like, we don't know what happened to him.
Doesn't he know there's a 2 a.m. curfew?
And then Tony comes up and he's like, so good news is the cops... don't know anything.
Yeah, he checked the morgues and hospitals.
They haven't found a body or anything, so, like, I mean, that's good.
It's a little morbid, but it is good thinking there, Piccolo. Good job.
And as they're like, oh my god,
How bad have his other boys' nights gone where he's like, well, just to be safe, gotta check the morgues. Not gonna fool me twice.
Paella is a wild time, let me tell you.
Like, Dagon is not his first Model K friend.
This is the first time Tony's been able to take Lucas out since the alien abductions.
I would love to see, like, in those earlier scenes, Piccolo constantly doing a head count. Like, all right, everybody, roll call. Find your buddy. Find your club buddy.
And then, like, pointing at random objects and being like, what do we call that? And it's supposed to be an orange, and someone says, like, sphere. Like, gah! Alien! Walk through that wall. Tony is so worried. He's so worried. Mm-hmm. Does he make them all, like, do, like, tattoos of, like, phone numbers or whatever, just in case they get lost?
He chips them like dogs.
He makes them all share their location with him before they set out for the night. But then Lucas turned his off.
No, Lucas also texted Tony because Tony likes to keep score.
Oh.
There's... You know who's winning? Ford.
Ford. So just as they're getting worried, Tony's maybe questioning that he shouldn't have told the captain, like, it's okay, they didn't find a body. A body appears. It's Lucas.
A living one, by the way. Yeah, he's not missing anymore. He's here. Yay.
And they're like, you're 6 hours late. And he's like, I'm a civilian. Like, I don't think I can be AWOL. I think this is, like, okay.
Right. Yeah. Like, Bridger is trying to talk like a dad, but he is using captain's words. He's talking about being away without leave. He's talking about regulation, but what he means to say is, I'm worried about you, I care.
Yes. And he's like, well, you're a member of this crew. Like, mm-hmm. even if you're a civilian, like, you gotta hold to the same rules. And he's like, well, I'm requesting to quit.
Yeah.
Because I met boobs.
That is the cliffhanger that leads into the credits. Lucas is planning to resign because he met a girl.
Yep.
Who clearly is, he has a much stronger relationship with than what's her name, the bikini babe from Daggers.
I mean, honestly, this is on par because Lucas was ready to, like, go to a colony of teenagers for a girl as well. Yeah.
he almost touched a boob.
He's like, I am getting affection from a person, and so now I'm gonna attach myself to you like a leech.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I have daddy issues.
So yeah, we rejoin the action in Lucas and Piccolo's room, where Tony Piccolo is counseling our poor boy, our young hero, that women aren't worth it, Lucas.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Not a single dang one of them. I love that they just show up in the morning to do military and then leave at night.
Yeah.
Like, we are really treating the Navy like it's a 9-to-5.
Yes. Yes.
And not a military tour where they are spending months at sea.
Well, we do learn is that they're going to head out for 3 months.
Sure.
Soon.
Sure.
But yeah, so Tony's just like, don't do it.
Don't
She's
do
not
it.
Worth it. Stop thinking with your junk.
Do not quit. Like, do not quit your job for a woman you met last night, Lucas. Do not do this.
Not for a girl you've known 10 minutes. And Lucas is like, 6 hours. Oh, 6 hours. Oh my God.
All right. Deep emotional connection then. Never mind. Excuse me. Again, lots of sarcastic barbs.
Yes.
Really favored in the script.
Tony does the whole thing of like, let me paint the picture for you. Mm-hmm, of like, well, mm-hmm. you know, she's different. She knows me. I've never felt like this before. All the shit Lucas is.
Yeah, all the love at first sight cliches, and Lucas is recognizing exactly what he would say if he were given the chance, but it does not deter him. And so Piccolo responds, quote, put a pillow over your lap, you'll muffle the voices.
Then Lucas has to go give his resignation letter to the captain,
mm-hmm.
and we cut to this scene where he's just like, what are you, my parents? And why is she here? Because Wendy, because Westphal is not around, Wendy's there with Bridger. And he's like, it's a nightmare for him.
I mean,
what if they got Westphal into like video in? That would have been amazing. Like, fine, I don't need to be here, but she's going to talk to you.
I mean, Dr. Smith should be there as, like, head of the science department. Like, did we disband the science department? Did we reorganize the org chart somewhere?
Well,
she should be here for his resignation.
She's not being there for that. She's being there as, like, the psychiatrist who's like, well, this is a conversation between you and yourself, and I don't think you've had it yet. And he's like, well, you get out of my head. Like,
If any of the adults suddenly resigned, would they go through all of this? Like, this feels like a for Lucas only situation. This is one of the season two times where he is a child, where so often he is just a very young adult.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they would like, if like Ford suddenly decided to resign, Bridger wasn't going to just accept that.
That's true. That's
right?
true.
Right? There are people, like, he would not just accept it from. He'd be like, what's going on? What's happening? What's
if Piccolo this? Suddenly resigned, there would be fist pumping. There'd be party poppers.
Have a great time. but it is still being treated, though, differently.
Mm-hmm.
It's being treated like he is a child who can't make his own decisions, even though, like, within this, he is legally an adult at this point.
Right.
Like, he's 18.
Follow-up question, would they be trying to talk him out of it? Would they be treating him this way if he were leaving for a job transfer and not a girl? Like, he's the new dean of Hacker Camp, right?
Yeah.
He's got Mycroft's old job.
Yeah.
Would they react like this?
No. I think there would be, like, questioning, especially if it was fast. But if it was something else that had to do with a job or an opportunity, there'd be disappointment, but, like, we're so glad you're, like, exploring other things. But because it's a girl, and rightfully because it's a girl, they're like, what the fuck? You are a child.
Because it's the checkout girl from last night at Virtual Dreams. yeah like they're entirely within the right, but they are treating him as a wayward child.
Yes.
And not like the peer that they have so often recently.
Yes. They're treating him like he's the 14-year-old
who's
having, like, a temper tantrum. And so Lucas is like, well, you gotta accept my resignation letter. And Bridger is like, I don't have to. I can make this go through, like, all the channels and it will take months. And Lucas is like, yeah, and that will make me like you a lot less than I do right now. Oh, stab my heart.
Oh.
The relationship. This is your daddy. No!
If you want to keep me in your life, you gotta let me off your boat. I gotta spread my wings and fly up someone's skirt real bad right now. Why quit? You're never out to sea for that long.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, Bridger, like, argues this with him of, like, take things slow. See how, why yeah. are you leaving? It's like, well, she's not going to wait for me. And it's like, she would if she cared enough.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? So Bridger is like, okay, here's what's going to happen. It's 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Go talk with her. Go, like, have a conversation about what you want this to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is an episode where the surrogate father and the captain are really, really mixed up and, like, colliding with things like the line, I'm not asking any more than your father would, but he's not here. I am.
Yeah.
Whoa. He's just saying it.
And Bridger, or, okay, so Lucas, after, like, being given this, like, take this 24 hours, he's like, this is ridiculous. And Bridger does the most intense, scary dad, sit down, Lucas!
Yeah!
And it, oh!
Yeah!
It's this glimpse of, like, again, Bridger trying to figure out how to, like, navigate this relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The balance of it. And then this weird, like, where do we treat him? And, like, snapping back to, like, you know, season one.
Mm-hmm,
he was
mm-hmm.
never in this much trouble before in season one, right? But it's like, line crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's so intense.
There's a lot of marriage talk in yes, this whole thing, yes. too. There's, well, like, a lot of marriage talk for, again, someone he met last night.
Bridger should maybe be focusing it a bit more on, like, go have a conversation with her and see, like, hey, can we do this long distance? This is how often I'm back. Like, let's make a plan for video calls and, like, yeah. when I'm back on leave.
I'll get like, you a souvenir from Westpac, which is where they're taking this trip we learn about later.
But instead the conversation is, go talk with her about marriage, children, your future. Like, 6 hours.
Yes. Just
6 hours.
Maybe that's the plan. If he starts talking about that, she will run away,
you know,
change the locks.
Bridger's actually very smart. That's exactly what he's hoping for. Like, you start talking
tricky,
about, like,
tricky Nathan.
I hope to have a family one day, possibly mm-hmm. 2 to 3 kids. How do you feel about this, Sandra? She's gonna, like, be like, door slammed. And he will come crawling back.
It's okay if we neglect them. In my experience, they generally turn out pretty good even so. Maybe he just wants to marry into a science family.
Mm.
How? What sort
he
of
knows
career
his
opportunities?
Barbecues will be great.
Well, what sort of placements are open to the son-in-law of Dr. Kirby? You know, you got to ask these questions.
Career advancement.
Yeah.
He's like, I can have a new daddy.
A Kirby daddy.
My daddy's not science-y enough anymore. I need a new science daddy.
Yeah, you know what they say about Kirby, though. He sucks.
Yeah.
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 I love you.
I love you. So, Lucas goes to see her
mm-hmm.
at her apartment complex that has, like, glass elevators?
Yeah, I wish I knew what building they used for the establishing exterior, but it must be some sort of tower hotel.
Spent so much time trying to search anything I could attempt to Google the right words to try to get.
Like
the
first
filming
five
location.
Or six stories are like sort of pyramidal, narrowing to like this 20-story tower that comes out. It's a bit phallic. It's an incredibly phallic building.
You know.
And inside the atrium, whether this is the same building as the exterior or not, I don't know. But yeah, interior glass elevators. So this location is clearly some sort of hotel in Central Florida.
It screams hotel.
Yeah,
I'm like, why
yeah.
does she live in a hotel?
Why does she live in a hotel?
So as she's going up the glass elevators, he's looking out. And sees her going down with some dudes, and then is like, oh my god, there's a gun on her
yes.
from one of those dudes.
Yes!
And he's trying to get the elevator to stop, but, like, none of the lights are working on this elevator. And, frantically, like, trying to get off to, like, go run to her rescue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, like, they take her to the ground floor and, like, out to a car and whatnot. He somehow does get the elevator to stop.
Yes.
While going up.
Yes.
Runs off the floor and magically just runs out the front.
He's somehow right behind them, even though they... Yeah, yeah. And he runs up to a cab that is driverless.
Yes.
It looks like he's going to try to hotwire that cab.
He's going to steal this cab. But you know what? He can't because the kidnappers pull a gun out and shoot up the cab, and the cab explodes the fuck all over the place.
Those wires are indeed quite hot right now.
Car just goes fucking flying. Lucas, like, gets thrown from the explosion.
Lucas has found himself in some sort of kidnap thriller.
Yes.
And so we go to commercial and come back where the local PD is checking out this apartment, and I love their tools.
Yes.
We see a guy put on a weird eyepiece that makes fingerprints appear.
Yeah.
And another guy has this wand that is getting some sort of trace evidence or fibers. I don't know what this wand does, mm-hmm. but we want to look at cool future detective tools.
Yeah. So then Lucas is getting interviewed by one of the guys.
Plainclothes local detective.
Yeah. And he finds something, this like stick thing, and he's like, oh, what's this? Have you seen this before? And Lucas takes it and is like, I don't know what it is. Never seen this before. And he's like, oh, that's weird. Now tell me more about what happened.
And this detective is my favorite part of the episode. Because he has the friendliest manner while constantly insinuating Lucas is at least a person of interest and maybe the culprit.
And so he does the whole thing like, how long have you known her? And he's like, I just met her. But you said she was something special. He's mm-hmm. like, yeah. Care to elaborate? Not really.
He keeps asking follow-up questions about Lucas's relationship with Dr. Kirby, the guy he says he knows, but oh, you only know of, you haven't met him. Let's keep needling this, and I know Michael Jordan. We've never met. Like, come on, man. but he's just getting under Lucas's skin. But still with this very chummy, friendly affect. I would go to this guy's barbecue, yeah.
And so one of the other guys comes over and is like, well, we didn't find much. And he's like, okay, fine, you can go back to your ship, but like, don't leave town. I might have more questions. And he takes back the thing that he had made Lucas hold. And when Lucas leaves, we find out that this was actually a lie detector wand.
Yes. Yeah. The way his little handheld lie detection system works, it requires the subject to be in contact
yes.
with this little wand. And so it was just like weird entrapment, I guess.
Yeah, like, here, hold this. What's this thing? Have you ever seen this before? No?
This is...
Okay, now I'm not going to take it back. I'm going to ignore you every time you try to hand it back to me while I ask you my questions.
This is not informed consent. There's some Fourth Amendment issues happening here.
Well, and like, the other detective guy is like, you're going to get caught with that one night. He's like, until that happens, this works great.
Clear Fourth Amendment implications.
So Lucas goes down the elevator. He goes to the lobby, to the most makeshift front desk dude desk. That's like...
Which is weird, because they clearly filmed... I mean, this might be a different location.
But this place looks massive, and it's just this puny little, like, setup fake desk that this one dude's at.
They couldn't close off the real desk for filming. Or maybe the real desk looked too much like a hotel desk and not like a building doorman. But so, in any case, he has an envelope for Lucas Walinka Jack.
Yeah.
Did you feel seen, dear?
I felt so seen. Maybe this is why I always loved Lucas, because I was like, yes.
Yes.
We both understand the difficulties of having a very hard to pronounce Polish last name. I get it.
So he opens this envelope and inside finds a tech thing, an object of some technical description.
With a note from Sandra that says to follow it to her. She needs help. And he asks the doorman, like, who dropped this off? And he's like, I don't know. It was just someone who said that you'd be coming out of her apartment at this time. Which doesn't seem suspicious at all, Lucas.
So Lucas's idea is that she knew she was likely to get kidnapped. So she dropped off this, like, GPS button, hoping that Lucas would save her.
Yeah.
And not like the cops or anything. Just Luke, the guy she met earlier that night.
Yeah.
Okay.
She really wants to be saved by the dolphin. Like,
come on, tap my boat. I sure hope when I get kidnapped, they put me out to the ocean. That'd be great. Let me tell you, this episode of the submarine show, no ocean.
No.
We see it from the distance a couple times.
Once again, the ocean only exists as a place for Sequest to float, and Sequest only exists as the apartment building of most of our cast.
So as Lucas is deciding what to do, we cut back to the ship. Where Wendy checks in on Bridger, who's, like, pruning plants, and is like,
it's
man.
It's his bonsai time. Bonsai time is important.
And he's like, I'm really rusty at being a father. Yeah, kinda. he did go tell her him to, like, figure out his marriage future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about all that happens in that scene.
Well, have you considered that tending bonsai would make a metaphor for parenthood? Would you like that to be made as obvious as possible?
No, actually.
And then they even underline, they say it directly at the end of the scene. It's so clunky.
In case you missed it.
Oh, you know, they grow how they want. You make suggestions. It takes care and attention. But, you know, nature has its hand an even larger one than yours, it seems sometimes. Like, yeah, we get it. We fucking get it, Nate. Fuck off.
Life finds a way.
So anyway, Lucas finds himself in a hedge maze built of pallets.
Yes.
Just discarded pallets.
They are stacked so high. What was the year of, like, the pallet Pinterest time?
Oh, I mean, this is...
This is a little late for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? This is the leftover of someone's pallet business for DIY Pinterest stuff for like weddings and shit. They had like invested and like, and then people stopped buying.
Well, we might be in 2020 now, so the pandemic is really reducing demand for large weddings or events like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so he's just like, this is a great idea. I'm not going to tell anyone where I am or what's going on, and I'm going to follow this contraption to this empty place that's just filled with pallets.
arranged maze-like. There's no rhyme or reason.
Really safe. Definitely not going to get murdered
here.
And
he just keeps calling Sandra's name like it's a game of Marco Polo.
Sandra!
And that is...
Sandra?
Sean! Sean! And that is not who he finds.
Shenandra? I forgot your name!
Alejandro!
Susan! Sandy? That's the thing, he just says a different name every time because he didn't remember what it was!
That's two people doing grease things in this episode. Mm-hmm. So, who he finds is instead a hard hat man.
Yes.
A hard hat man with a gas-powered dart gun that knocks Lucas out cold.
Yeah. And when Lucas wakes, Sandra's there, waking him up.
In something that can only be described as a lair.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And is like, oh my god, are you okay? I'm so sorry. And, like, she's got, like, a big...
contusion, you might say?
Scuff on her face.
She's been roughed up a bit.
Yeah.
She's not had a great day.
You know, he's so worried about her face. And she's like, I'm okay. He's like, no, you're not. You're not okay.
You were so much prettier yesterday.
So, of course, he's like, do you know who they were? And she's like, I don't know. They were from the Freedom Fighters Liberation Army or something, I guess. I'm not sure.
How very specific. The Freedom Fighters Liberation Army.
I don't know, but let me rattle off this entire name.
Hey, darling, we watched a whole episode about the Freedom Fighters Liberation Army. What's their ideology?
I don't know.
No, absolutely none given.
I don't know.
They are as blank as Dr. Kirby's, like, curriculum vitae. It's just a name.
You know, he's like, well, what do they want? And she's like, they want you. I think they followed me for you.
So
and
it's
now
really
you're gonna
weird.
Hate me, Lucas. You're gonna hate me.
It's really weird if they're trying to get to Lucas from her that she knew it in advance enough to lay this breadcrumb trail.
Uh-huh.
Lucas, you used to be smart.
Like,
well, maybe he's thinking that wasn't actually Sandra. That was one of the guys pretending to be Sandra to get him out here and meet him with the gas gun. That's a plan. That makes sense.
Maybe. So, of course, he's like, I could never hate you.
Mm-hmm.
And they smooch, and then the door opens.
They're, like, Sandra is really getting into, like, soulmate talk in this conversation.
Yeah.
It's been, like, what, 10 hours? 14 at the most?
It's hard to know how long he was knocked out.
Sure. You know what? Fair.
Love grows fond when you're unconscious.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's all the daydreams.
It's all the daydreams.
Love of the lost cause of the noble confederacy. Ortiz! No! Stop it!
Just gonna go with he really loves old movies. He just really loves old movies and he likes putting himself in old movies.
Yeah.
Even if it's weird.
Yeah, it was Atlantis, the Lost Empire, and,
sometimes he makes poor choices, like Sound of Music, you think, hey, yeah, Captain Von Trapp, that's not the man he goes with. And you're like, strange choice!
It's the uncle, right? Or cousin? That's the guy.
Yeah.
The real weasel, yeah.
So it's that he wants to get yelled at like...
Anschluss?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Ortiz, be Christopher Plummer. He's so damn hot in that movie. God damn it.
It's true. and the Navel, you know? Yeah, yeah.
The equivalent of Mr. Darcy walking through the fog is Christopher Plummer tearing up that damn flag. And then also, like, dancing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And when they each say when they first fell in love with each other, the Sound of Music's good, you guys.
I need to go to Sound of Music sing along this year.
The Sound of Music is good, actually.
It's really good. So door opens.
Yes.
And
in walks a shampoo commercial of kidnappers.
I think they were extras in the hair metal band.
These. Every one of these kidnappers has the shiniest shoulder-length hair you've ever seen.
So, they're like, yeah, so we want the Sequest, and you're gonna get it for us.
Bum, bum, bum.
And you don't want to do that? Fine, I'm gonna shoot your girlfriend here.
Ah, oh no, don't do that.
But it's okay, she's just knocked out. Because
it's all gas guns and darts.
Yeah, and I'm gonna keep her alive so I can, like, rip her apart later and make you do what we want.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So then, they grab him and they make him sit down so he can watch their little, like, presentation.
Yes, yes, they're watching the news, perhaps pre-recorded news,
mm-hmm.
of Vladimir Kamenko being named Chancellor of the UEO. The UEO has a chancellor now, by the way.
This is the only time you'll ever hear this.
So there's a chancellor and a secretary general. And how do these offices interact? What are their spheres of influence? What are their duties?
I don't know, but they're really upset about this chancellor thing. And he lists, like, all these things of, like, we're trying to stop the UEO, the fascists, and they're this, and they're that. And Lucas is like, the universal healthcare.
He doesn't say healthcare. He says mental healthcare.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I missed that.
And, like, again, we have to ask, what is the UEO for?
I don't know.
What does it do? What eggs do they break to make that omelet, whatever it is? And therefore, if we had a clear idea of that, we might guess what the Freedom Fighters Liberation Army is. But neither of them is defined at all, so you can't, like, guess the other by their shape. This is a political thriller that has no politics.
Yeah.
It just keeps saying political words like, oh, the kidnappers think the government is a bunch of fascist thugs. Are they?
Why?
Why do they think that?
What did they do?
What would they do instead? Who is their favorite dead German, French, or Russian author? This is important to me. I want to know.
Yeah, we ain't getting that. We're not going there. We're just going to be told, however, mm-hmm. that why they have Lucas is because they want the dead man's codes.
The dead man's codes. Because the Sequest is such a valuable piece of equipment, such an investment. If some sort of tragedy were to happen and there's no one left aboard, they can't just leave it floating in the water for anyone to recover. There are codes that if you transmit can pilot the Sequest remotely to anywhere on Earth.
Yes. And McGath has these codes.
Yes.
And there's another set that is in read-only memory on the boat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they need the Sequest computer expert to go get them.
Yeah. And Lucas is like, but you've left something out. The helm control is always the priority. So, like, it's not gonna work. And they're like, oh, we've thought about this because the UEO always throws a big bash before y'all send out for 3 months. I'm like, they do? You guys are going out for 3 months? And that's happening tomorrow, and there's gonna be just, like, a skeleton crew on board. So, like, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yes, Lucas is sent back to Sequest to do some little sneaking, some deception in mm-hmm. order to get those codes. But he's under the supervision of sidekick Robert.
Yes.
And Robert is played by Jeff Moldovan, who is primarily a stunt performer. He was stunt coordinator on films like My Girl and did stunts for Cop and a Half and The Patriot.
Mm-hmm.
He was fight choreographer for Bloodsport, The Dark Kumite. That is the fourth in the Bloodsport film series. Oh. As well as fight choreography for the 2011 Charlie's Angels reboot TV series. Mm. He also has acting roles in things like Superboy and Thunder in Paradise, which both filmed at Disney MGM Studios before Sequest came to town. And performed stunts for the Punisher film that featured our boy Roy as Frank Castle's badass dad.
Mm.
Yes.
So yeah, he's got a camera. He's being sent on board. And this is what's going to happen is this is all like they're getting ready for this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We cut back to Wendy, who's having a nap.
And we know that when a psychic is asleep, their powers are enhanced.
Yes. And so she has heard Lucas saying they can't get away with this. And is mm-hmm. like, oh! And so rushes off to tell Bridger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so as he's getting dropped at the boat with 10 minutes left, no one else is there.
No.
Except Henderson.
It is empty. She is the skeleton crew is one person, because you know how one person has a skeleton. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And it is Henderson's turn to walk around with the guns out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's been hitting those weights. And my favorite thing is that in her one real moment in this episode, you know what? Someone's rooting for these crazy kids out here to make it work. I think it's very cute that someone is like, that someone on this crew is like, well, maybe Lucas did find his soulmate. Good for him.
Tell me all about your romance.
Yeah, it's cute.
Do you need women advice?
And she has two pieces of women advice. Number one, tell her you love her every single day. Number two, listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lucas is like, that's nice. Can you go find this book for me?
Because he's got to clear out his room. He's got to get out of here. He says he's like here for basically paperwork and, you know, dotting I's and crossing T's for his severance or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So she's like, okay, fine. Yeah, I'll go get it for you. And like rushes out so he can do his spy shit
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and get into a panel and tinker with things.
Lady, you are not prepared for what you're going to find in those boys' rooms.
She goes and is looking all around and finds Piccolo's lady magazines.
Folds out that centerfold. Luckily, she overlooks the four-month-old paella rotting in the bottom of that locker. That's what you got to worry about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be so gross.
It's shellfish. It's not going to keep, Tony. What are you thinking?
And so she doesn't find the book, though, because there was no book to find.
Right, right.
And comes back to the bridge to be like, hey, Lucas, I can't. And, like, he's not there.
She does try to imitate the pose of the centerfold in the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
It's, and again, it's sort of the, like, have your cake and eat it too. Like, yeah, she'll do the sexy thing, but then she'll, like, laugh at how silly and ridiculous these magazines are and get back to, like, looking for basically Lucas's fake library book.
And so Lucas has gone back to this hidey hole, wherever they are.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love how computer chips on TV are all highly holographic.
They're so cool.
So rainbow shiny.
I mean, here's the deal, is we were into it with CDs.
Yeah, you know
CDs,
what?
CDs fucking did that. Pretty.
Yeah.
And then we decided we could just use, like, cloud-based shit.
They get so much prettier if you warm them up in the microwave for about 15 seconds. Then the color really comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. People should try it if they haven't seen how that goes before. Yeah.
Don't do that. like, don't do that.
Okay, but you should look up videos of people doing it, because it looks really cool when it's in someone else's microwave. Yeah, do not do that.
Don't break your microwave. So he hands over the very holographic chip,
mm-hmm.
and Dr. Kirby comes out, and he is in on this, and he's like, I can assure you, my daughter has not been harmed. And then Sandra comes out and with a gun on Lucas.
It's a trick. It's a daddy-daughter trick.
Lucas looks heartbroken.
I love the main kidnapper dude. I don't remember his name. I don't think it matters. But I love that they cast a guy who could be a sidekick in any given Die Hard and or Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
But you put him on TV and suddenly he's the mastermind. He's in charge of the place.
No, except he's not actually, because Kirby is.
Right, right. Wait a minute. You mean the kidnappers who were hunting for Lucas didn't put together this whole plan based on him suddenly meeting a girl out of complete random chance and hitting it off with her? Whoa!
So, Bridger and Wendy are over at Sandra's apartment with mm-hmm. the investigator.
Again, more establishing shots of the most phallic building in Sequest history. For the honeypot episode, of all things.
And so the investigator is filling them in that, like, hey, this Kirby guy isn't all you thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
He actually was forced to leave the UEO 2 months ago
mm-hmm.
after some very highly classified documents were tampered with. And now they're investigating him to see what other shit he got up to.
And also his political leanings are being investigated and his associations.
Yes.
That's the most detail we get about Professor Kirby's politics, that they exist.
And of course, Bridger's like, well, what's this have to do with Lucas? And they're like, well, he's young. There's a hot babe. Obviously, he's impressionable.
Like, this local PD detective has cracked a global political conspiracy taking place inside UEO headquarters.
Yes.
He informs Nathan Bridger and Wendy Smith, two of the highest ranking scientific officials in the UEO, about what...
Their co-worker, basically.
Their boss, essentially, got fired 2 months ago and they don't even know it.
Yeah.
This cop is so good. He's amazing.
So, Bridger, of course, mm-hmm. defends Lucas. Like, no, Lucas is too smart. He's a scientist. He would never.
And the detective's response is, all right, Captain, but have you ever known any men who are too smart about women? It's everyone's weakness.
But as they're heading out to go back to the boat, the investigator dude is like, hey, that's mine. Can I have it back? Because he also had Bridger holding the lie detector wand.
Mm-hmm. But the detective does follow them where they're going.
So Kirby's setting up the technology.
Yes.
They're all, you know, getting things ready. Lucas is tied up. Mm-hmm. And Sandra has to go, like, you know, have her whole, like, you know, I would have told you the truth if I thought you'd understand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want this, Lucas. I just want a better world.
If you could just tell me in your own words, what is fascist and repressive about the UEO? Maybe Lucas would listen if you gave an example.
Just some info?
Is the Freedom Fighters Liberation Army backed by the commercial beef industry? Like, what is happening? Yeah. Who are you? Who are you and what are you? I feel like this is important for understanding what's even going on. For that matter, what's the mental health program about? How does that work? Is it good? Is it helping? Is it turning people into demons?
But no, she gives him none of this. She's just like, nothing. You know, you just don't understand. Saving the world.
Does it have something to do with, like, the Montagnard Confederation or any of the minor confeds?
No.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know.
Not telling me anything. Where are you based out of?
What is Westpac? I've heard of NORPAC.
One's north, the other one's west.
It's the West Pacific. I can guess what's going on there, but like, why is it such a big deal for the UEO? Are they not a member? Is there tension? Are there like disputed borders? Give me some politics in your political thriller, please.
No, you're not going to get that. Instead, we're going to go to the UEO ship-out party.
Yes, yes.
That apparently happens anytime they ship out for months at a time.
Well, this trip is a big deal, apparently.
Maybe it's because they haven't done this in a while. That's why we're getting a party.
Yay, we're finally rid of them. We can get all these parking spaces back. Yay.
So Tony is talking to the investigator dude.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, you know, that's all that really happened. We then stopped at Virtual Dreams because I had my coupons.
And Piccolo ain't giving up his coupon guy.
Well, yeah, they're like, well, where'd you get those coupons? From a guy? What guy? A guy!
No, your business, you just, my coupon guy.
You just got coupons from a guy? This guy gave me an envelope with coupons. Which means it was a plant.
It was a plant all along.
But yeah, he ain't no snitch.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to tell whose coupon guy is. Guy might want to give him other coupons.
That's the 29th Amendment.
Coupon guy.
You don't have to give up your coupon guy.
I wish I had a coupon guy.
You are the coupon guy.
I don't give away my coupons. I just keep my coupons.
You're a stingy coupon guy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the one that's like, hey, my neighbors haven't picked up these coupons for buy one, get one free sandwiches from the local chicken place. They've been here a week. I'm going to take them all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We spend some time cutting back and forth. So back over at the lair, Kirby's put the chip in. Mm-hmm. They're all like, we're ready to go. Of course, the satellite dish has to swirl because that's when
shit is happening. Signals are happening. Yeah, yeah.
And they're getting ready. And so they like launch it. They're like, this is what we're go. And when they do that, the lights go out on the bridge of the Sequest, and then they come back up. And when they come back up, the screens are suddenly taken over. But not with what you think. They're being taken over with Lucas's emergency beacon.
Yes, he tricked them. He did a Lucas trick.
And this pops up not only across all the screens of the Sequest, but any available screen it can reach, which includes the screens at the UEO party.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So everyone, Bridger, Wendy, they're seeing this, the investigator. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's Lucas's, like, emergency beacon. Like, we gotta go!
I love, in the earlier bits of the party, where all these screens are just, like, different Winamp visualizers in the background, like, behind Bridger's head.
Yeah.
But yes, the Lucas signal is blaring.
With his coordinates.
And so police Corvettes squeal down the street toward these coordinates, and it turns out the lair is the back room of Virtual Dreams all along.
So this girl goes missing, and you're trying to investigate what's going on, and no one thought to look at her place of employment?
The last known location of Lucas Walenchek?
Well, not technically the last known
location. The second to last known location.
One of the last places he was in the past 12 hours. No one thinks to look there.
No, not even to, like, go and see, like, ask the manager about, like, this Sandra girl and what's up. Yeah, nothing.
Coworkers, did she call out? Have mm-hmm. you seen her? She seems to be missing.
No, instead we're going to crack this political conspiracy, this secret firing at the highest echelons of the UEO. That just takes the afternoon, by the way. Then we'll go, he already set off the beacon. That was the next place we were going to look, I promise.
So Sandra comes out with all the dudes, guns a-blazing, gun pointed at Lucas, is like, you know, you're going to let us out of here. His guts are going to be blasted everywhere. And of course,
our laser guns.
Yeah. And so the cops are there, but they're also like waiting for backup. But Brody's there with the Brody boys.
And the Brody boys are better than cops.
They're like, we can take this, Captain. And they're like, fine, okay, you can do it. And so they go rushing off.
There's this
from their Jeep.
Yes.
With some of them grabbing rope to eventually rappel down the roof of a building for no fucking reason at all. Yes,
because it looks cool.
They literally rappel down the building right next to other dudes who, like, just walked up like normal.
Yes, they do. And this is all in service of this long, long gunfight with lasers. Lasers on both sides. Signs are exploding on the street. A flower bed explodes. And eventually, they drop the Virtual Dreams awning down on top of all the bad guys.
Yes. So they have caught the bad guys, and Lucas is safe. He's sitting in the back of an ambulance. Bridger and Wendy are there. The awning
fell on him, too. Like...
He's fine.
It's fine. They're all just stunned.
So Bridger and Wendy are there in his time of need. Little bit of, like, daddy comfort of, you know, this hurts a lot. I'm not going to accept your resignation.
And again, like in the beginning, his tone and his meaning is very fatherly. I'm not going to give up on you, kid. But his actual words, he's putting it in terms of utility.
Yes.
Like, I took you on because you're the best, and you've only become, like, more valuable as, you know, a crew member for your job.
Well, and it's a little tongue-in-cheek, though, because he's like, why should I give up on you now that you're older and more mature? Also, you fucked up, kid.
You fucked up so bad.
And so Lucas, though, is like, okay, I need a minute. As he looks so fucking sad. He has the saddest face ever. It's just so defeated. But he rallies himself, and he goes over to the cop car that Sandra's in the back of. You know, she has a bit of, like, I suppose you expect me to say sorry. And he's like, no, I don't. I've learned.
I expect you to say what the Freedom Fighters Liberation Army is. Liberating what? From whom?
I guess from the UEO. What are you fighting for? I don't understand.
What are the most important freedoms and how is the UEO impinging them? Please.
We don't get that. We just get Lucas being sad as they drive her away in the cop car.
But of course, the true end of the episode is our fish fact. Both DeLuises, the brothers, are taking this one and telling us about Winston the Walrus and some various walrus facts, including that their big whiskers are there to help them find food.
Oh.
Yeah, like shellfishes. And the scientific name for a walrus translates to tooth walker, because they use those tusks to help lift themselves up and crawl across the surface of ice floes and such.
Okay, yeah.
Darling, do you have a fish fact?
Yes.
There was a pause.
Well, we're winging this right now because I never found one yesterday. So, I've Googled fun fish facts. We're gonna share a few of these right now.
Nice.
The world's smallest fish is the tiny goby, which lives in the Philippines.
It's so tiny.
It grows longer than half an inch at adulthood, or rarely grows longer than half an inch at adulthood.
Well, that is a little fish.
Yes.
That's a wonderful fish fact. Dear, thank you.
Hold on. Most fish do not have eyelids.
Oh.
They lack the upper and lower eyelids found in mammals and other such. But some do have a membrane, so like a third eyelid that can protect and moisten their eyes.
Okay.
And there are also some that have transparent, immovable eyelids.
Ooh.
So there you go. There's your fish facts.
There's a variety of eyelid options.
Yeah.
That you can outfit your brand new fish with.
I don't know what type of eyelids, if any, that tiny little fish has.
The little baby goby?
But I bet they're small.
They must be as small as they can be. If they even exist, because most fish do not have eyelids.
I'm going to go with it probably doesn't have eyelids because they're too small.
We're going to play the odds on that one.
Too small to have eyelids.
I've got a fish fact. Did you know that a honey trap or honey pot is the use of a romantic or sexual attraction to get information out of a target of espionage, often via subsequent blackmail?
And not honey?
No, it is a piece of jargon. The term was introduced in the novel Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and has been widely used ever since, to the point that people believe it's just from like manuals or something far, far older than just a 50-year-old book.
So, do I need to rethink Winnie the Pooh now?
Perhaps. The KGB historically did use attractive women to ply secrets, and popular spy fiction took that inch and ran miles and miles with it. Think of every James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Whereas Lucas would also be familiar with the subsequent use of honeypot in network security, referring to a portion of a network that looks relatively unprotected, but is used as a decoy and logs any unauthorized access as a means of preventing it from penetrating further into the actual good stuff.
Gotta avoid that penetration.
Mm-hmm. Which members of the Sequest crew do you think wear promise rings and did the whole, like, purity ball thing?
Tim O'Neill.
His virtual dream really makes me think that he also failed the sexual harassment seminar. He did not do well on that test.
Brody. His grandparents raised him.
Yeah.
And, like, we do know that his mom was a weird, like, possible kind of-ish teenage mother. Not really.
That's true. That's true.
And
I think
they were like, don't go to a...
They really hammered abstinence in to Brody because, yeah, his mom was desperate to become a mother at age 19.
So they're like, no, sir, you are going to be pure. And it's why he's such like a sexual harasser now.
As soon as he got out from under their roof, he became the big bad wolf from Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, he's the one. I'm going to go with him. Explains a lot.
Anyhow, thank you all for joining us, you fine, fine listeners. In fact, the finest in the world.
And you know what you can do?
What can they do?
You can be so fine.
Mm-hmm. So fine they blow my mind.
And you know what you can do? You can go... leave us a 5-star rating or review wherever you listen to us.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere that lets you give us some stars. I want some stars. I want to see stars that outshine the sun. And I also want to read the reviews you leave on Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm. So you should do that. You should also go tell your friends about our podcast. Spread the word.
You should. You know what? Tell your enemies.
Tell your... freedom, resistance, whatever army, friends, you know. And tell them to come join us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun time over here. You can also follow us on Blue Sky.
You can. That's where you're going to have a good time. You're going to have fun. You're going to hear about our upload schedule, announcements like that. And you're just going to see some fun bits and jokes. In fact, darling, I'm going to show you the most recent thing I put on the Blue Sky.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Is it good? Is it funny? Am I gonna like it?
I think it's one of my best.
Yeah.
See, it's good.
That's actually really good.
That's a really good one.
It's really good.
So if you want to see something every once in a while that makes you react like that related to Sequest, you should follow Whiskers at wskrs.bisky.social.
Mm-hmm. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.